And we're recording. And yeah, we're going to talk about lifelong learning because I clearly have a lot to learn, Dr. David. And yeah, so where do you want to get started here? You know,
first off, we're talking about lifelong learning. Anyone who's emailed you, right, or seen your LinkedIn profile clearly knows you have a habit for lifelong learning. You have the world's longest signature block. That might actually be a Guinness Book of World Records signature block. No. Matter of fact, explain to me how you came up with so many designations that you needed.
Well, look, I didn't need them all, first of all. And second, there are people with more. And I know that I've taught some of them. There are people with more designations.
I like the subtle flex there. I taught some of them.
Yeah. Now, look, remember, there's a point. But yeah, like I count them up on the wall. So what do I have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. 10, 11, 12. I think I have 13 total. And I think one's rolled up somewhere. And you have one up there behind you, too.
But yeah, that's my med school diploma.
but yeah, like in all seriousness, you know, I kind of went through the learning process and like, you know, college. I went to a liberal arts school and I was poli sci and religion and I studied those things and really they taught you how to think. And I feel really blessed about going through that background. I went to law school and my plan was to go to business school. So I always had this view of like college, law school and business school, which gave me this mix of legal and business, which I thought was really important to understand both. Now, where everything went from after that was like, I realized I decided to go into a specialty area and I decided to go into financial services. And so then I tried to learn everything I could about the financial service industry. So like I took RICP and retirement income. I took CLU on life insurance. I took CHFC and CFP on general financial planning. I then got my master's in tax because I wanted to understand that part. I also have my CAP designation, which is like philanthropy and giving, which is another subsection of this world. And then I got a master's in financial planning, too. So, you know, as you kind of looked at that, like it is more purposeful than somebody might just glance at and be like, why did you end up with all these things? Well, I decided I wanted to understand the industry and the profession more broadly. I don't have a lot of other, I'll say, financial service education programs I want to do. You know, there is a little bit of this in this profession because of the continuing education credits. Like, you got to do something. So you can like go online and take webinars and click through like random quizzes and get it. Or you can go take a program and like you can go actually like dive into material and learn something. So to some extent, some of the people that end up with all these different credentials to me are doing CE in a smarter way. They're going to say, well, I'm going to go get another credential. I'm going to go dive into a program that goes deeper than saying, take a little quiz and get my CE done with. So there's a little bit of a balance on those. So I think if I take another program in our space, it'll be due to the CE requirements. I did drop out of a PhD program. So I gave
such
up
a slacker.
On that one. I know.
Such a slacker, man.
But when I think about my next phase, it's more in the leadership and development side there. Like the programs I look at, and I haven't signed up for anything recently, but I've looked at more of these executive leadership training programs because that's actually the next phase that I need to like learn more and invest more and like grow personally. Like I build up I'm not the most knowledgeable person, but I build up a base of knowledge in financial planning and tax law and distribution planning. And, you know, now I need to better understand management and leadership and ways to interact with people and be a better, leader and strategist for the teams that I work with. So I know that was a lot to kick off, but that's just a little bit of my story on it, right? So I think that's helpful as we go into this conversation. And then you've gotten multiple degrees too and different careers in this sense, right? So talk a little bit about that, man.
Yeah, I mean, mine is a little bit different. I mean, you had a goal, a direction. you kind of knew. Like, and I have this new thing where, you know, for a long time, life just sort of happened to me, right? Like, I just sort of went with the flow, right? As opposed to me choosing life, right? Like, choosing what I'm going to get out of life. And that's part of, like, just sort of surviving, right? For me, first step was, look, let's just get a degree. Because coming out of poverty, like, in our generation, you were told you needed a college degree in order to, like, move on with your life. And so I saw that as the first stepping stone to being something more that than my family could sort of think of. I was the first one to get a college degree. I got that degree. Originally, it was going to be in chemistry. And then, again, life was just happening to me. I got some very, very bad advice from a college basketball coach who basically gave me an ultimatum and said, hey, I'm tired of scheduling all these classes for you for chemistry because you're the only one doing this hard major. You need to change your major or basically don't play basketball. I was more focused on basketball. So I switched to something that I thought was easy, which it was for me, was applied mathematics. So I ended up with an applied mathematics degree. And really, that is like a stepping stone, right? It turns out like that's actually a really good degree to go any number of ways. I could have went to business school. I could have went on and got an engineering degree. I could have went on and got a PhD in mathematics. It really gave me a lot of opportunity to do whatever I wanted to do.
But you didn't do any of those things.
I didn't, right? I decided, originally I was in a nuclear power program, right? Which, to looking back, I actually really like nuclear power. I like clean energy. I should have just got a degree in nuclear energy. Then I probably wouldn't have needed another degree. But knowing me, I probably still would have went on and got another degree. But I decided eventually to go to medical school. One of my big regrets is that I didn't get a PhD, right? And sometimes I feel like when you get a professional degree, your expertise is only seen in that one field as opposed to a PhD where people are, they know you for one specific thing that you are a quote unquote expert on. And it's all fine and dandy to be called a doctor, but there are times that I am envious of those who went on to generate some type of buzz in physics, engineering, or in mathematics, and they have like specific expertise that is very helpful. Like, I love combinatorics. And so I constantly think about, and me and you go back and forth about this. Do I need another degree? The conclusion that I always come to is I've accumulated so much knowledge from learning on my own, because most of the time I didn't have enough money to go pay for another degree. I didn't want to accumulate more student loans. So I just ended up reading what I can and teaching myself what I can. And so now I've gotten to a point where there's not a lot of degrees that help me progress in life for where I need to go. Unless I'm going to Harvard Business School, MBA doesn't help me, right? Because an MBA, primarily in my case, is going to be used to basically get a better network. Unfortunately or fortunately, I've been able to, heck, I network with you, right? You're one of my best friends, right? And I've been able
to. Definitely. You probably benefit from any MBA then, like any like online school of anything then. If I'm your network, you got to relook at that.
No, but I mean, those are just things, right? And so like for me, I love data science and I love those things. But like one of the things that you and as well as Jason Wink have always told me is like, stop writing so much code and like actually go use your voice, right? Which is the reason why I'm on this podcast. I'm using my voice to help people. But the technical side of my brain is constantly looking like, man, do I need to get a PhD in bioinformatics or should I go do one of these things? Now, the interesting thing about getting technical degrees is that at some point, just like you talked about, right? Like you went out, you sought to learn as much as you could about financial services. But at some point, if you are a leader in your field, you have to do exactly that. You have to learn to lead. And it turns out those technical skills that you gathered, they aren't very helpful when you become a leader, right? Because it's a different skill set that either you're born with or you have to go out and learn and work at it. Some people have said, because I played sports for so long and the way I grew up, I just became a natural leader because I learned how to protect early on, how to protect others around me. And because of that, people started to gravitate toward me, and I was naturally gifted at some things. So I went on to become a leader. It also helps that I went to the United States Naval Academy, where people are born or bred to be leaders there. But learning, I consider myself a lifelong learner because I don't consider that I'm that smart to the point where I know enough. I'm constantly saying I don't know enough. I'm constantly asking questions. And part of learning is just being willing to ask a damn question. Like so many people are afraid of just being wrong, that they would rather hide in the fact that they don't know something as opposed to taking 10 minutes to learn about it.
We'll be right back with the show. But first, I wanted to tell you a bit about our sponsor and the production company behind the FinServ podcast, PodPony. Are you on the lookout for a podcast producer? How about a content boost or even someone to help take your brand to the next level? Well, let's face it, creating content and keeping up with a content schedule just isn't easy. That's where PodPony comes in, your all-in-one content partner for thought leaders and business owners. From media coaching, podcast production, blogs, webinars, newsletters, website support, social media, or any other facet of the content world, they've got you covered. From initial concepts and strategies to production and distribution, the experts at PodPony are with you every step of the way. They'll help you create customized content that turns heads and brings in business. All you have to do is show up and do what you love. They'll handle the rest. So saddle up with PodPony by visiting podpony.com and start your content journey today. Now, back to the show.
Well, I've got two things off of that one. We'll go with the less serious one first. So you mentioned nuclear power. Homer Simpson, do you think he's a waffle or a pancake first guy?
Waffle. That guy's awesome. He ran a reactor.
Yeah. Well, the second one here, too, is kind of what you just brought up, is the smartest people that you probably know that I know. You know, as you start diving into a field and understanding it, you actually realize how much you don't understand and that there's nuance and details and things that you like, you know, you kind of get smart enough to learn that you don't know it all. And, you know, I think that's a really interesting thing, which is, you know, I don't know that I was that way when I graduated college, but, you know, at different points earlier on, you kind of like, oh, okay, I figured this out. And then like 6 years later, you're like, ah, I really didn't know anything then.
No, and that's a legit thing.
Yeah. But I do think it's a thing that, you know, when people are starting out, like, challenge yourself on that too, because you're going to come out of maybe a CFP or a program thinking you know financial planning. You're going to look back in 5-6 years and be like, you know, I had so much to learn. And part of it is, as Dr. David said too, is like asking questions and then experiencing things. For better or worse, one thing that I've always done at every new role, this actually explains a little bit of that past. I don't always weave it in the story, but one of the reasons I also took all those programs is at the time I was doing teaching too. And so I wanted to experience the programs and I wanted to know the knowledge that eventually I was going to end up teaching, right? So I wanted to have the same experience that other people were going to have. So I knew what the client experience was. When I took my newest job the night before I started, I went online, grabbed my phone, and went through the online experience of signing up as a client from my phone from my kid's floor. And so I knew the pain points. I knew the things that didn't work. There was a point in there where you had to put how much you know, monthly income or the monthly deposits you expected to make. And you couldn't put a number in, David. You had to click each time for $100. And I told the head of, you know, our client experience on that side, I was like, think about somebody who wanted to put $1 million in, how many times they would have had to click. Like, they would have quit the process, right? So like,
you know, you go through this experience, you understand it better, you can be better, then you learn about it. And learning comes from both experience and the books. And I think that you shouldn't lose sight of that. So when we talk about continued learning, it's a mix of a lot of different things, including the relevant experiences you get. So I will always tell you, you start a new job, you know, if you're going to start a new job as an advisor somewhere, sign up as a client, know what the experience is like, right? If you're going to go sell insurance, you better buy that insurance first and say, hey, what was this experience like? You know, you need to eat your own cooking out there and that experience part. And that's going to teach you a lot. It's going to teach you more than probably the books did going into the role.
Yeah. I mean, those are perfect points, right? The degree or the credential just gets your foot in the door. It's the experience that actually provides the knowledge, right? And I tell medical residents and surgical residents, like, every patient is going to be your learning opportunity. So every client interaction in financial services, like, you should have a question that is generated from that interaction that forces you to go and learn something better, right? Because you're not going to know everything. And you can be as boastful as you want. You can be as prideful as you want. The reality is you don't know enough. And don't kid yourself on thinking you know enough. You need to constantly be worried and paranoid that you're missing something. Go learn something. And what that does is it constantly leads you down a rabbit hole. And I call it, that's literally what I call it. I say, go chase the rabbit hole, right? If you can't walk away from a conversation asking yourself, well, you know, actually, I didn't know that, and Google it so you can find a paper, you can find something. But I want to come back. You said something interesting. You said, you know, instead of doing a bunch of CMEs, like I instead signed up for a program, right? That's how I got my ongoing learning. And I never really thought about it in there because there's a lot of things that I want to learn. But like, it might require a $20,000 master's program for me to do it. And these days, I just don't have enough time, right? Between kids, my job as a surgeon, like, I have to prioritize how I'm going to do my learning. So for me, you'll see all these books back here. I spend a lot of money at Barnes & Noble or Amazon to basically grab books that will help me, right? Learn something new, or a biography that helps me learn something new. And that is like a way that I do lifelong learning. I also assume that like I'm wrong, right? I start from the position that I'm wrong and I go to try and find out why I'm wrong. Oh my God. If you're just listening in, my esteemed co-host who was just named to the top 20 on the investment news, hottest financial services person, is now wearing a Ninja Turtles mask. And so I am talking to a fake Ninja Turtle right now. You know what? You would love my daughter's costume. I got to send you a photo. It's like a 10-foot high gorilla that is like blown up.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. So this is Donatello, and the reason that he's my favorite Ninja Turtle, right, is because he's the smartest one.
He's a nerd, right? Yes.
Yeah, that's why I loved him. You know, Donatello is a lifelong learner. He's reading books, you know, understanding new technology, turning pizza into fuel, right? And he's an impressive, impressive, you know, teenage lifelong learner.
Well, here's a question for you, right? If you're a new, let's say you're just getting started in financial services, you have like zero job experience before. How do you start the process of being a lifelong learner, right? Like, cause most financial services folks are not coming out and they're not going to have a JD and an MBA. They're going to get their bachelor's in something. They're going to get some type of client-facing experience, hopefully. And then they're going to start their CFP, get their CFP, and then they're ready to sort of hit the town or hit the road running, right? So how do you motivate yourself to continue learning in that scenario?
Yeah, and I'll just walk through some functional things, right? So let's just assume you're on that path. You're going to take your CFP courses, get your CFP. That's part of your learning. Then once you get through that, look, you're going to have to do that continued, you know, your CLE credits over time. So then you've got to decide, and there's a couple different paths you can go there. We'll just walk through a couple of the different options right now, honestly. Like, one is you can just kind of like bounce around and look for like online webinars that offer it. And some people just do that, right? They see, oh, look, an hour of free, you know, CE from Carson Coaching, and they hop into that one and they do it. Your firm might offer some free online CE. I would probably say that's one of the least effective ways to learn moving forward, right? You're probably going to zone out. You're going to play on your phone. You're going to answer emails. You're not going to be super engaged in it. That's my experience watching most people engage with, you know, webinar CE stuff. It's just kind of knocking it out, check the box. Some people then go buy something at like Kaplan or somewhere else where you can buy 20 hours and you just click through the courses as fast as you can and fill out the stuff at the end and try to get through it and just click the box again. That's pretty ineffective. The next two, I think, are the better two. And there's a couple different ways to do this one. So they'll like, what I'll say is like the live conference experiences. So either a large conference or even down to your local FPA chapter will likely run in-person CE stuff. I would say use that because what you're going to get out of it is not so much just the material, but like, let's say you go there and you're talking to somebody about a donor advised fund and that's what the presentation's on. Well, the thing you're going to get out of it is other people's experiences with donor advised funds. So people are going to chime in at the end of the presentation. They're going to talk about which provider they use. Oh, that one's a headache from onboarding clients because of this, that, and the other. You're going to get some more real experiences out of those engagements. So I find that to be a little bit more helpful if you can make the time for it. And then the other one is what I did early on in my career, which I am not currently doing, which was sign up for another, you know, designation program, especially if your work will cover it. I always tell people take full advantage of those educational credits that your employer might offer. Not all of them do, but if your employer covers, you know, $5,000 of, you know, qualified education expenses each year, you can usually use that for designations, especially from places like American College, because it's an accredited college. So it's no different of taking a 3-credit course there as it is Penn State. From a technical right reimbursement standpoint. So use those, get paid to go knock out your credits and work towards another designation. I would say, you know, the reason I like that is like you can be purposeful about, let's say you want to work in the special needs area of the world. Well, go take a special needs designation then. Like learn about that specific area so you can dive into it. And as you said, David, like chase the rabbit hole down a whole program. And then you might determine after that, like, hey, I want to take a bunch of webinars on this topic, or I want to go to the national, special needs conference and dive into that. And it'll kind of allow you to focus your path a little bit more than just a scattershot of whatever free CE shoots out of the woodwork you're going to show up to.
Yeah, I think that's important to talk about, right? Because I personally know that I need a problem to chase or a problem to solve. And that's how I do my learning. I never think that people who are basically just flying blind in the wind are going to do the right thing in their learning because they aren't solving for a problem that is going to be realistic and what they need to take care of, right? I mean, this is how people end up with degrees in the wrong field when they're saying, oh, I knew I wanted to go to medical school or become whatever, an engineer, yeah, but you decided to get a degree in communications, right? Like you decided like not to pay attention to the prereqs. And those are things that are important. You have to be sort of what you think is going to get you to the next step, right? So everyone's going to have a progression. Now, there are people who ultimately they never, ever want to be in leadership. And I 100% respect that. But if your goal is to be a technical expert in your field, then you have to demonstrate that you have the knowledge of a technical expert. When you come out of the maximum amount of knowledge that you're going to have, book knowledge, is going to be the day that you leave your program, the day that you graduate. After that, it's a clear, like, steady decline and decay of that information because it's not going to be as recent. So in order to stay fresh and current, you have to constantly replenish, sort of fix the areas that are becoming soft and weak. And you have to constantly work that muscle to make sure that you are staying up to date, because that information is no longer relevant, right? It's like doing computer science and saying 20 years later, you can still write code. The answer is you can't, because the field has moved past you. You have to constantly learn.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite topics, right? That relevant experience is, you know, it's on my mind a lot. And I love it because I think the world changed. And I don't have this, I haven't memorized these stats, but there's really cool stats around, like, you know, jobs and like how long your experience in a job is relevant. And so I was telling the Dr. David recently that Bert White did a presentation on this, and he talked about, like, blacksmithing, right? Like 1600s, you learn how to be a blacksmith. That lasted you your entire life. Nothing changed in blacksmithing for 60 years, right? So, like, you would just be a blacksmith and you'd be the same, like, that skill set you picked up early on. Like, yeah, you get a little bit better, but the skill set lasted your whole life. And then, funny enough, it would last your kids their whole life, and then their kids their whole life. And basically, you could pass that same skill set down for, you know, 120 years without much disruption to the workforce. And then obviously things started to change, right? Like Industrial Revolution and then technology. And then now we're at this speed where I think there's some research that says, what, like, it's like 6 to 8 years or something, your skill set is relevant in your job today on average, right? And then essentially, like, you need to update it. And so we're in this much more condensed time frame where your skill sets and knowledge, if you were really good, and I just kind of pick on this one, like, if you were a really good options trader in 1994, does anybody care if you just, like, pulled somebody out of 1994 and put them into our world today, and you're like, hey, I think you should hire this person, they were a really good options trader 30 years ago, you'd be like, I have no use of this person, right? Like, probably none of your skill sets are useful anymore. Even the way that things were traded are no longer relevant, right? Now, maybe they could get back to it, but they wouldn't have a lot of relevancy today in the world, right? You know, they'd be thinking, what is the .com error, right? Like, I have to know technology and the internet. Like, that's crazy. Why do I need to know that? You know, so think about things like that. And you go back a decade and you think about all the companies that really didn't even exist 10 years ago. And now we use them, you know, all throughout our daily life, which is pretty wild. So we're moving faster and faster into this relevant experience. What do you know now that can add value today? It's not what were you good at 10, 15 years ago. The good news for young people coming into the workforce is your ability to compete with somebody with 30 years of experience from like a technical job standpoint has been, that's a huge, like, removal of a barrier to entry. Now there's other aspects of the job that's still going to take you longer to figure out, right? Some of the interpersonal leadership, emotional stuff, you know, but from a functional standpoint, it actually has removed a barrier to entry that, like, when you think about AI's role in, you know, financial services, there isn't anybody with 15 years of experience of that. The reality is the people coming into the business today are going to have just as much experience in how to integrate that as anybody else has, right? So relevant experience for that job, everyone's kind of on a similar playing field today.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think about the speed at which information flows today versus the speed at which it flowed like 30 years ago, right? You had a edge and you could maintain that relevant experience because information didn't flow as fast. Today, we have information at our fingertips. Now, what worries me, and eventually there's going to be a university that says, you know, here's your initial certification. If you continue to pay us, we'll allow you to continue taking classes every year to get updates, and you can pay us a subscription fee, and you can just basically be a lifelong learner from Harvard University, right? Instead of these one-off courses, you basically pay tuition every year to just get access to classes 24/7. And I think we're heading down that path, right? Like,
so that exists today.
It does. But it's not like the standard at which we all as professionals exist, right? Like, there's not a Villanova University line item in your budget that is a fixed cost because you need to stay up to date in the legal and financial world, right? That just doesn't exist. Like, my medical school isn't charging me so that every couple months I go back as a refresher to make sure I get the latest and greatest information. The one thing about what I like about your plan and your way of doing lifelong learning as far as getting another certification instead of doing a continue, the fact that you had to pay money and the fact that you have to take a test in classes and do coursework is a hack and getting yourself to buy in, right? When there is no consequence of a webinar and there's no threat of what happens if I fail. Well, if you fail and you paid money, you're out money, right? There's no return on investment.
Yeah.
And so I think that plays some dividends in ensuring that you pay attention and you learn the information.
Yeah, and people knew I was in those programs. So I also put that social pressure of failure out there too, right? Like, you go to a webinar, there's no social pressure of failure. Like, you don't pay attention, you just don't pay attention, right? Like, you know, that's actually an issue with books, right? Like, an issue with books is the fact that, like, I've got a couple back here I've never read, right? I ordered them or I got sent them and I've never read them. Right?
You're notorious for that.
Yeah. Because, like, you know, well, I've read some of these, like The Psychology of Money I read. That's a good one. But I get to a couple of these other ones. Like, there's a financial plan book in there. I won't read the whole name, but, like, I never read that one. Like, somebody sent it to me. I know the author, but I didn't read it. And because I didn't have any social pressure to read it. I didn't really commit to it, right? Like, and that happens sometimes when I buy books off of recommendations online. I'm like, oh, that sounds good. I'll click the button. It'll send here 2 days, but I don't read it. And, you know, that's the difference of being, like, interested in something and committed to something.
I completely agree.
Let's close out with this one. Because reading is a good one, right? Like, I think we both would say read books, you know, find ones that you're committed to reading. Because I got one under here that's holding up my computer that I really want. I did want to read. It's called Useful Delusions. And I really wanted to read it, but now it's just propping up my computer. What's one book you've read this past year that's been really meaningful for you that you'd recommend to others?
Oh, man. You know, More Money Than God. Right. The History of Hedge Funds was a great one. And to be honest, you know, the thing that I've noticed, there's patterns that take place in books where they become, in an effort to make them long, they become repetitive. Right. So unless it's like a biography telling someone's life story, but a lot of these self-help books and things of that sort, they become very, very repetitive. So once you get the general gist of what is going on in the lesson, you don't need to read the whole book to get the summation of the point. But More Money Than God, I have enjoyed The Power Law by Sebastian Mallaby, who also wrote More Money Than God. I never even finished Barbarians at the Gate. It started out well, but it's a very dry book. But those are the books that I would say, like, really gave me, like, some pause, right? Like, I don't read medical textbooks unless I'm, like, studying something. And so I read a lot of financial books because those lessons in finance actually help me in my primary field.
Yeah. No, I love that, man. Thanks for sharing. And go ahead and give those a check out. And what other financial books, The Behavioral Investor, I'm a big fan of that one too. Daniel Crosby, good guy.
Shout out to Dan.
Daniel. Dr. Yeah, maybe we'll have him on at some point.
Yeah, we need to have him on.
So, because he'll have a new book coming out next year.
He does have a new book coming out. Morgan Housel has a new book coming out too.
He does. I think it might be out, or at
it
least
might. Yeah, actually, it's like early release, probably.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we'll have to check those two out as they come out. Maybe we'll have them both on and talk about their books at some point.
Yes, that would be good.
All right. Yeah. So Dr. David doesn't like my books. He thinks they're too repetitive, as he just said. So he couldn't finish either one of them. You know, he's in one of them, right?
I did finish it.
Featured in a Wall Street Journal bestseller, but can't even finish reading the
book. I did finish it. Okay.
Don't believe him. Nothing positive to say to me that day. He was just ripped my heart out, stomped on it. You know, it's just
it wasn't
like,
written
better
for
luck
me.
Next time. Better luck
it,
next time.
It was not for my audience.
It was written for you. That's why you're in it. It was for you. I just apparently did a poor job of making it for you. So,
well, look,
people bring you
one
pancakes
of us,
in the morning.
One of us is a accomplished author and the other is a schmuck. So clearly I'm the schmuck.
No. You're featured in the same book. You wrote a part of it, okay? You're a contributing author.
Right? Oh, man. I would never say that. You're such a you're a good writer, man. I'm a blogger.
And I don't even I'm do working that on the next one.
Well, the next one I'm looking forward to. I'm definitely reading that one.
I sent you an outline.
I know, and it was good.
All right. Well, hey. Thanks for hopping on here tonight, man, and just kicking it a little bit with lifelong learning. And, you know, everyone's got to find their own path, too. So I don't want anybody to listen to mine and say you should follow that, because I don't tell everybody to follow my path. I will answer one more question, because I've been asked this a lot about MBA. You hit it earlier, but I'll close with this is, you know, MBA, they do teach you things, so not to discount them. And the Chicago Booths and Wardens and others ones can be really good at education, too. But a big part of it is networking. You know, so lifelong learning in those programs can be a lot about networking, which we've talked about before. But I will tell you, you're going to get more out of that after a couple years of work than directly from school. And I tell people that all the time with MBA, that like go work first before you hop into those programs. A lot of FinServ students ask me that, should they go get an MBA right after school? I tell people to go work, you know, because a lot of times you can find jobs that'll cover that later on, too. And you can always go back to the MBA program. I don't think you need that to get any job out there. Go work first, figure out what you want to do, then decide if that's right for you.
I agree with that.
Yeah. So a little bit of parting advice from us today. Thanks, David. Appreciate you, man.
All right. Peace.